Savior Frederick Durst with the intro for the redone Mission Impossible theme. The soundtrack is something we will get to in this episode as we have another episode reviewing the Mission Impossible universe. Welcome once again. We're back to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I'm your co-host, Mike One. This is the co-host, also Mike.
I'm also Mike, and again, I'm going to antagonize you at the beginning of another episode. When I visited my brother at college,
yes,
met you for the first time,
yes,
I thought you were Fred Durst.
I could see that.
You went with the Fred Durst look.
The backwards fitted
years
cap. Yeah,
I mean, this is better than my look. So you're much cooler than me.
Like, I have.
My look was like the Wonder Years kid. From then and probably till now.
Yes, yes. Well, it's even worse things than looking like Fred Savage, but yes. I have a friend who runs a company down in New Jersey, has a big warehouse, big paint company, very successful. Over the doorway to his warehouse, giant poster of a shirtless Fred Durst.
Really?
Oh, very successful company. Millions of dollars.
Has he propositioned you?
the poster or my friend?
Your friend.
The friend, no. The poster.
Okay.
We're doing another episode of the Mission Impossible series. Mission Impossible 2, the John Woo movie. John Woo is the one that takes the helms and martial arts the shit out of Ethan Hunt and his MI cronies here.
Yes,
as
sir.
We're doing a lead up to Mission Impossible Fallout, which comes out at the end of this month in July. Go back and listen to our first episode, which we just put up a couple days ago for the first Mission Impossible movie. We had glowing things to say about that one. We were very pleasantly surprised with that movie, and now
I do want to say up front, it's very annoying to search these movies on Rotten Tomatoes and IMDb and Wikipedia because there is a colon between Mission and Impossible that I always forget, Michael.
That's fair point, yeah.
Also, there's a double I on some of the websites, and there's
and
a number two
yes,
on
that,
other websites.
That problem I can relate to.
What's the real title? What's the deal with the title, Jerry Seinfeld? All right.
Did you add Jerry Seinfeld at the end because you didn't think people would know what you were going for?
No, because I'm a redundant joke maker.
Let's get into the production profile and some of the specs. Also, Mike's going to start us off.
Cast and crew. Okay. Directed by John Woo from A Better Tomorrow, The Killer, Hard Boiled, and Red Cliff. Some of his big name movies there. His last film, Manhunt, came out on Netflix these past 3 months, I think. And his next film, The Killer, is the now long-awaited remake of his classic Chow Yun-fat movie from 1989, this time in the remake starring Lupita Nyong'o. So that is intriguing,
it is
I must
intriguing.
Say.
John Woo can do good work. He has done good work.
Yes, sir.
This is not good work.
TV show creator Bruce Geller, once again, from the 1960s, gets story credits. Ronald D. Moore and Brandon Braga also get story credits. The screenplay credit, however, goes to Mission Impossible 1 Savior and Chinatown writer Robert Towne.
If you were to watch Chinatown for the first time and I were to say to you, hey, listen, this screenwriter is still attached to a property, a franchise going today, tell me which one. How many guesses would it take you to get to Mission Impossible?
A lot.
Right?
I'd be like, the girl with the dragon
tattoo. Like something,
or
something more dialogue-driven. Yeah, I'm totally... Props to him for making this work,
like
though.
A creepy white guy from the 80s and 90s would only be good at dragon tattoo.
Fast and Furious.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't expect this. You're right. Anyway, Mission Impossible 2 stars the director of 1993's Fallen Angels episode entitled The Frightening Framis.
Such a bad person.
Some guy named Tom Cruise. It also stars some fucking guy named Anthony Hopkins.
Never heard of him.
What is he doing in this movie, Michael?
Yeah, I was shocked to see him. He's not only not credited on the cast list in IMDb, he's uncredited in the movie. His name is not there.
But he's like the trailer maker because he delivers a few lines really well. He's like the soundbite maestro from this movie.
Was your take that Anthony Hopkins reads lines well?
He does.
Okay, good to know.
Westworld. If you need exposition dumped, there's no better exposition dumper than Anthony Hopkins.
I will agree with that statement, yes.
And he dumps like the best of them in this movie. Anyway, Ving Rhames is back. He is once again the hacker extraordinaire.
He had to have left Tom Cruise at that first movie. Like, look, I'll do another one. And then 18 movies later, he's still doing them.
Well, the bromance from the first movie should have set up a bigger Ving Rhames theme in this movie.
it set up a career for Ving Rhames.
Would you have been surprised at the end of Mission Impossible if Tom Cruise went to him and say, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship?
While the Cranberries' Dreams played in the background at that last scene.
I noticed that too. I love that song, goddammit. Anyway, Westworld's Thandie Newton stars in Mission Impossible 2 here. It also stars Richard Roxburgh as Hugh Stamp,
yes,
the blonde.
Great name.
Lieutenant of bad guy number one there. John Polson is the Australian helicopter guy / getaway driver.
Listen to some of these names. What was he? Billy Blaine was his name in this one. Hugh Stamp and Billy Blaine.
Yes. In Bruges is Brendan Gleeson, one of the bright spots about this ensemble from In Bruges, from all the
aptly named McCloy.
Yeah, McDonough Brothers movies. Mm-hmm. And Dougray Scott is the main villain, Sean Ambrose. Scott is like a dead ringer for like stunt double Tom Cruise. But
yeah, you have a little tidbit about a career choice that he made.
Yeah, he's in Ever After, Hitman, My Week with Marilyn. Mm-hmm. Been in a lot of big movies over the years. Done his thing. He had a choice in this year.
We all have choices.
As I segue to the production notes, he had a choice between X-Men, where he was cast as Logan / Wolverine.
Whoops!
And the bad guy in Mission Impossible 2.
And he went with?
He went with the bad guy in Mission Impossible 2. Think about Hugh Jackman. Jeez. How many times he's played Logan in X-Men's standalone movies.
I mean, it took Hugh Jackman from an unknown to Hugh Jackman.
I guess, yeah. I mean, it's like if Val Kilmer. No, Val, because Val Kilmer had a great career.
Right.
It's like if Dougray Scott turned down Iron Man or something, you know? I mean, it's
and look,
that
no,
big.
No disrespect to Dougray Scott or his career. We just rattled off some big titles he was in, but
they cast him.
Yeah.
He was going to be
one
Wolverine.
Of the all-timers. That's the Tom Selleck turning down Indiana Jones type stuff.
So, yeah, many of the action sequences in this movie, again, they were planned before the script was nailed down. Fascinating to me because they had central action set piece, end action set piece. Those were planned first.
So if you ever want to know how to not go about making a movie, plan your martial arts action sequences where you walk through fire and flames before dialogue.
Yeah, well, it kind of worked with the first movie, though.
Get the hell out of my house.
But we agreed. Like, we liked the first movie.
You're right. And it was similar. It was a similar setup.
It's Bass Ackwards.
Yeah,
no question.
It is. It's just, I guess it's a matter of, and it's really mind-boggling, too, because you had the same town was touching up the script in both movies. So,
he pulled off the impossible in the first.
I don't get it.
The first movie.
Yeah, you know, you're right. It's really weird to see. So maybe it has more to do with the director's touch. John Woo versus Brian De Palma in the first one.
So here's the craziest production note or behind-the-scenes thing that I found out. Tom Cruise filmed the rock climbing sequence without a safety net and for much of it without a harness.
So this is getting to like peak Tom Cruise mythology, right? Because we had in the first episode, we talked about how all he had to do was make a couple phone calls and he gets not only $70 million for a Mission Impossible budget, but also access to this bullet train in London that they didn't want to give him. So now his head cannot fit in this world. And he's like, I'm gonna go climb that mountain. And they're like, okay, you want to say, no.
With
you guys stay here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go climb that mountain.
With his bare hands.
Right?
That's the thing. Like, if he did it with a bunch of ropes and pulleys.
Exactly.
Like, the only way I climb a mountain is, like, via elevator that you build for me outside the
ski
mountain.
Ski lift. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're in the same boat there.
And it better be fully enclosed.
Right.
And it better be billions of dollars worth in development. I am not otherwise going atop that mountain. I don't even want to go up on a helicopter that flies up there.
I'm with you, man. But, I mean, all respect to him, but this is kind of where we just had. He broke his ankle in the filming of this Mission Impossible movie, Mission Impossible Fallout. So, and it started with these movies. He's done his own stunts to his own detriment.
Now, could this legend be total BS? I don't know.
Sure.
Like, I didn't watch the special features for the DVD, but
who
it
knows?
Could be BS behind the scenes. He is jumping from cliff to cliff. He did have a harness for that, because that is...
He must have hated that. He must have been so against having that.
So he did do that. But the dude is like squatting in between a crevice.
He's crazy.
Leaning back. I'm sure that he had something going on when he's like holding like Jesus Christ pose on the backwards.
Yeah, he had the power of Zulu, the Scientologist.
Before he like flips up. I don't know, dude. Like the things he's doing on that mountain
are
insane.
It's crazy. It's actually insane.
Like I'm scared for him.
Of course, especially whether or not it's true. Like I started this by saying the Tom Cruise mythology. He's got this whole reverency about him where you hear, oh, Tom Cruise did the mountain work in Mission Impossible 2 without a net, your first instinct is like, wow, he's nuts. It's not like, no, he didn't. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, he's like the best stuntman in the world. He's
crazy. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So he's not just the biggest movie star in the world for 25 years, hit and miss, but he's also the best stuntman in the world if he's doing that.
Fall.
I don't know. Maybe I just have no conception of how good these stunt people are throughout the movie industry, but watching.
I have a hard enough time walking around on Earth.
Yeah, just mind blown.
Yeah.
All right, so the other nugget that I had here was this soundtrack was a pretty big deal for us growing up.
I'm holding this so near and dear to my heart. I still listen to multiples of these songs pretty much weekly. Have a Cigar by the Foo Fighters with Brian May is a banger. The Limp Bizkit song is a banger.
Still good, huh?
The Rob Zombie Scum of the Earth song. My brother and I used to wrestle when we were like 12 years old. We used to have our own characters. That was his entrance song because it is a banger.
Now, I will say that I'm very tempted because I did do this. I went on a music video deep dive, YouTube deep dive of this soundtrack and all the music videos accordingly. I kind of want to do like a half-isode where we just totally... Be the Beavis and Butthead critics.
Talk about the music
talk
videos.
Talk about
that
how stupid these music videos are. Well, and that's but how kind fun of, they are at the same time.
And we do that in part. We go back and listen to all of our half episodes up until these Mission Impossible episodes have been about the best original song categories. And boy, do we riff on some music videos.
One by one, the band Metallica runs away from planes slash... Well, yeah, planes, basically. Right. Either on the ground in the desert or in a building... It's so dumb, but it's so awesome. It's so awesomely bad 90s. But yes, Rob Zombie, Butthole Surfers, Foo Fighters, Godsmack, Uncle Cracker, Tori Amos, all featured on this soundtrack.
This was peak soundtrack.
You own the CD. Oh, I own the CD as kids.
Yeah, of course. You had to. This was required listening.
I will say the Metallica song also does not hold up.
Which one was that? I don't remember the Metallica song.
Hey, yeah.
Disappear. Like, yeah, all right. You don't like really that song? Help. No.
No, he's kind of goofy. Then the music video is really bad.
I will say it was used effectively. The soundtrack was used effectively in this movie. There were times you felt like you were watching a music video in this movie because there's so much slow-mo and walking through fire and then these hard nu metal songs playing over the top of it was pretty badass.
All right, Mike, that is my production profile. You got some specs here?
Yeah, let's talk about specs for Mission Impossible 2. Also, Mike told you, directed by John Woo, written, as also Mike told you, by a lot of the same cats that are back. Robert Towne getting touches. Bruce Geller gets the TV rights. Ronald Moore and Brendan Braga were a lot of sci-fi television properties to their names there. A lot of the Star Trek properties and Deep Space Nine, Voyager, Discovery, et cetera, et cetera. Debuted May 24th, 2000, so we're a good 4 years after the first one came out in 96 and went wide, produced again by Cruise Wagner Productions and distributed, as all Mission Impossible movies have been, by Paramount.
So do you think Tom Cruise needs like a Rocky training montage of 2 years to practice all these...
Well, now that he's like in his 50s,
neck-breaking stunts.
Maybe we'll get one a year since he's running out of physical prime.
How scared are you for his safety now, watching what he did then?
Yes. He's crazy.
How crazy.
Stop
he is.
Doing these things.
He's a nut. Like, I'm afraid for him.
He's going to put the stunt people must hate him, too, because he's putting them out of business. Like, that's easy stunt work.
All these, Tom Cruise stunt double lookalikes are just like, I got nothing.
Wandered around Hollywood.
They're working at Starbucks. They can't do anything.
123-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. Sequel got roughly 50% budget bump from the first one, as the first one was an $80 million budget. This one's $125 million. And another financial success, bringing $546.4 million at its box office run, $215.4 domestically, $331 worldwide. It's the high watermark for the Mission Impossible franchise in terms of gross box office. Its $57.8 million opening weekend was the highest opening weekend for all of 2000 movies, and it finished number three domestically behind How the Grinch Stole Christmas and Castaway, and number one worldwide in terms of 2000 box office.
Number one!
Yeah. Dealing with the leader in the clubhouse here for both the franchise and that year. IMDb has it a whole point below its predecessor. It's Mission Impossible 1 was a 7.1. This is a 6.1 on 270,000 plus reviews. It was considered a step down by all critics' sites as well. 57% critic score on Rotten Tomato, 146 critic score, 83-63 split positively. Average critic score 6 out of 10, which is actually the same average critic score as Mission Impossible 1, ironically. A dismal 43% audience score, down about 28 percentage points from the first one.
And yet they flocked to the theater.
Yeah, 451,000 plus reviews, average audience score of 3 out of 5.
Is that the troll factor, I wonder? Because I wonder when you get so many people, so many more people going to the theaters, the trolls, the people who are negative speak out more. This was like Star Wars The Last Jedi.
The internet factor was also more, you know, there were more message boards and stuff like that established in 2000 than there were in 1996. So it could be a lot of people getting their rocks off.
Or no, this movie's just bad.
It's not a good movie. 59 Metascore, which again was the same rating as Mission Impossible 1 and a B cinema score, though proved that all news wasn't all bad for this movie. It won another Golden Screen Award from Germany, as the first one did, but the only other notable wins are the 2000 MTV Movie Award for Best Male Performance for Tom Cruise and Best Action Sequence, which is the car chase at the end of this. Hans Zimmer got a win for Broadcast Film Critics Association Awards for Best Score, which is a Critics' Choice Award, but he won it for three different properties, The Road to El Dorado, Gladiator, and Mission Impossible 2.
So what does that mean? If you're above average for three properties instead of crushing it for the best score of the year,
I don't know what that
you
means.
Win?
That's
Critics'
I've
Choice?
I've never seen something like that. But
really?
Hey, all right.
It doesn't make
sure
any sense.
Yeah, those are the specs for Mission Impossible 2. Let's talk about some production stuff.
Production values, Mike, sight to sound. We both kind of, in the prep today, we're like, no, we don't think the visuals do hold up.
No, the special effects, I think, they're not as good as 4 years prior.
Right.
At least to me. The kung fu stuff is awesome. It's shot really well.
How much better are the special effects in this movie than on an episode from the 1990s of Walker, Texas Ranger?
It's not. Yeah, it's a good
Cinematography's
point.
Better. Yeah, John Woo's good sure. at cinematography.
But how many scenes do we need to see of someone slow-mo walking through smoke and fire? Like, that happens at least five times in the third act.
It is goofy right now. You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of the Rocky 3 and 4 turn that that series went. Because Rocky 1 was really good. Rocky 2 still had, you know, some merit.
Right, so they're trying to refine
critical merit. And then 3 and 4 just becomes, like, the Rambo movie of Rocky movies.
I mean, this is a very John Woo movie.
Goofy.
I just don't think this property works in a John Woo movie.
And yet, $546 million.
Yeah, it made the most money out of the whole franchise.
Probably because the marketing's so strong. And then they really went ham with the soundtrack.
The soundtrack was just baller.
And that's why people came out with a 40-something percent audience score, because they're like, ugh.
Oh, that music was
awesome.
I
remember
awesome.
Not loving this movie when I saw it in theaters.
Yeah, I referenced the last scene on here a couple times, and every time I brought it up, you've been like, yeah, but the movie wasn't that good. And this is my first time rewatching it since probably the 2000s.
We saw it in theaters, right?
And
now, you were younger than me. Do you remember liking it? Because I know a lot of people who liked this movie.
I remember liking
theaters.
I did like it when I was younger, but on rewatch, there's just story elements that do not flow and do not belong together. And the misogyny is so heavy in this.
Well, I've just always been discontented and
life
snooty about life in general. So I was always a harsh critic with movies. But yeah, I didn't like this back in the day.
Yes, a little too much reliance on the slow-mo.
I was 16, too.
Too much reliance on flames and smoke and doves. Doves play a big role in this.
However, I would say, again, the stunts are phenomenal.
Sure.
Like we gush
Kung
a little
Fu
bit.
Looks good.
The Kung Fu looks good.
It feels out of place, but it looks good.
The motorcycle, some of the motorcycle stunts are pretty phenomenal.
Some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them
are
just
stupid.
Absurd. Yeah.
Like, why don't any of the henchmen have guns on the motorcycles? Like, they're really worthless. Like, they're just like, it's equal to the Metallica music video.
And
where the plane has to fly down low enough to actually collide with you to beat you and to kill you.
We talked about in the first one, we praised it for its use of physics on the train,
right,
on the train top. And then this one, a semi truck hits a car. And the car fucking obliterates into flame. Like, I don't think that's how it would happen.
Right.
So, yes, visuals are hit very hit and miss. Emphasis
for
on
my
this.
Analogy, though, the boxing of Rocky has always been preposterous from one yeah, through Creed, probably two.
It's true.
Yeah. You get one good punch and you're done. And there's like 47 good punches per round.
Haymakers landing punch after punch. Yeah.
Yeah, true. So that's like, yeah. Mission Impossible. When they fight, like he's hitting him with full force with a rock in his hand, and he just like shakes his head off. Yeah. Shakes it off.
Next, get back out there.
Next
people
Perry.
Wonder why it took so long for concussions to be taken seriously in this life.
Right. Good point. Great point. Great point.
Oh, Tom Cruise gets hit with a brick. He's still fighting.
Tom Cruise can do it. He's a little guy. Get back in there, son.
Yes, the sights are hit and miss. The soundtrack we gushed about, that's a lot of the sound. The score for this I thought was just as effective as the first one. Probably less so.
I wanted more of the soundtrack worked into this movie.
I did too, but that's because I'm honestly irrationally in love with the soundtrack. I would have had every scene featuring the Limp Bizkit song.
All right, so I guess to move into some of the... We could talk about the soundtrack the rest of the episode as far as I'm concerned, too. That's a good point. Yeah, it's very good. All right, so moving into the performances, some of these are hammy.
Oh, some, huh? Which one were you talking about that
was... Cruise is okay. I mean,
he is.
He's pretty good, honestly.
He's not bad.
The performance level of Anthony Hopkins, say what you want about his lines...
Yes.
Pretty good for his job. I mean, he is literally Basil Exposition. And I think Basil Exposition comes about because of his character in this movie.
Thandie Newton, hated the way the script treated the character, but her performance, what she was able to get out of it, was impressive.
Again, I disagree with the extras' reactions
with
their acting choices in these scenes. Because when those two gods, that god and goddess, when they walk through a room, every eye is going to snap towards them. It's just impossible not to. They're in their prime. They're as beautiful as people can get.
Right.
Give me a break. Thandie Newton walks in a room.
Oh, yeah. Jaws drop.
Give me a break.
She's gorgeous. As is Tom Cruise. It's just, but
with
you're
that
not wrong.
Hair.
Yeah. The hair was flowing.
The Slash
in this
Film guys said something funny, which I'm going to totally step on right now. But they're like, this whole movie was just about Tom Cruise's hair.
He had to have been told to grow it out like that for this John Woo action spectacular because it flows so nicely in slow mo. He had to have been under instructions to grow it like that. I refuse to believe anything different.
So I'm trying to think, 2000, long hair was coming back.
2000 wasn't a proud year in fashion, I don't think.
The late 90s was like NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and the short hair was in.
Yeah.
So you just follow the cast of Friends, the male cast of Friends. Like my haircut has always stayed the same. Sorry, it just is what it is. It's a Brillo head. But their haircut, like they went short for like seasons 3 and 4.
Like 2000.
Or like seasons 2 and 3 went short. And then this was when Matthew Perry grew it out.
Yeah, Matthew Perry's got a little bit of a flow from, so he was, there you go.
Like Joey had the goth boy haircut and then he went shorter.
Right. So maybe.
I waste way too much time on Netflix with binge watches of Friends.
Mister, I don't watch TV shows.
That's right. I was just complaining to you, but I'm like season 8 now. I have no life. All right.
We got anything else? You want to go into Oscar lens here?
Anything on the script? We kind of have said it's preposterous in many ways.
It treats its characters very poorly.
The most preposterous, and you're going to have some fire.
Yeah.
I kind of expected that it was going to be bad, so I braced myself for it.
I expected bad. I didn't expect, like, offensive.
Right. No, and this movie is offensive. Then the first movie had elements of
misogyny
too. Yeah,
it did.
Well, we forgot to mention.
We kind of
I wrote a big thing in this one because we thought it was going to be a... We're going to put both movies into one episode. So I kind of...
Comparing the two, yeah.
Yeah, I grouped them together, so we'll have that. And spoilers. In terms of an Oscar lens, Mike, for the last thing here, the score was solid. If they gave Oscars for stunts, then Tom Cruise would win all those awards. Nothing else,
every
right?
Every year. Nothing. I don't know how you can argue that this movie, after seeing it, is any part
of... Do you think Robert
Award
Towne just got cocky?
I don't know. I wouldn't...
After the first movie?
Seeing his...
Or it's just such high degree of difficulty to literally take a story and say, all right, we want a motorcycle scene here at the end, and in the middle, we want a heist that goes wrong.
2000, by the way, was the year of Gladiator, led with nominations 12 and wins 5. I just don't think this is a John Woo property. I don't think his style of filmmaking is right for this type of movie, which is weird to say because Mission Impossible, you think about the big action set pieces it's known for.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it worked. I think it was hindered by that. But no, Oscar lens, nothing for me.
Yeah, doesn't work. All right, so I guess we go into spoiler
section. Yeah, no spoiler dance section for these. We're just going to tell you that it's the spoiler section coming up now. If you don't want to hear anything about the twists and turns of the convoluted plot of Mission Impossible 2, stop listening now, go back and rewatch it, and then come back and visit us. Or if you don't care, if you have rewatched it recently, you just want to know what happens, stay tuned. We're going to start talking about these spoiler sections right now. Michael, where do we start?
All right, I kind of yada yada a lot of stuff in this section, but okay, Scottish terrorist bad guys steal the antidote for a pandemically huge virus that was being made in a lab in order to come up with a better antidote for that virus to help big pharma, whatever.
As pharmaceutical companies do.
Okay, so...
you know, Pfizer's working on that super flu.
Terrorist bad guys. Yeah. Terrorist bad guys pretend to be Ethan Hunt in this opening scene on a plane when lab guy Russian scientist is basically talking about nonsense. There needs to be a hero. There needs to be a villain in every movie, but oh wait, I'm talking about the virus.
Yes, exactly it. The subtext was not there. Subtlety is not John Woo's strong point. We'll get to that.
Essentially, Scottish terrorist bad guys, once he takes off the Tom Cruise mask, realize that he's a slightly less good-looking Tom Cruise. They crash the plane. Everybody is sedated with the oxygen mask. They put poison in there. They crash the plane, but not before they skydive to their freedom.
Of course.
Slightly cool, not really cool, kind of gross. All right,
that's done the first better thing. In the third Dark Knight movie.
They think they stole the antidote, and they think they have more available viruses to find.
Sure.
Okay. Anthony Hopkins briefs Tom Cruise after he climbs mountains that we talked about just for fun on vacation. He's brought in. Anthony Hopkins tells him that they now need to protect the virus at a lab in Australia. Okay, in order to do this, this ridiculously convoluted plot must occur. Instead of them just immediately saying, all right, let's go hijack the stupid virus so that this antidote is worthless or so that the terrorists can't get a hold of the virus.
And oh, by the way, we sent Dougray Scott to do this in the first place because you were climbing mountains, but he decided to go rogue.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. Like, why isn't their attention immediately focused? Because all Dougray Scott has is the antidote.
Right.
He doesn't have the virus.
Which I would guess probably they don't make money if he marketed it, honestly.
Well, here's the thing. They don't know this yet. So maybe I'm not giving the script enough credit. I'm sorry. Because the whole big thing with Brendan Gleeson later was to uncover the fact that the only other known existence of the virus was in the Russian scientist he injected himself.
Okay.
But anyway, still, the whole...
Well, they don't know what Chimera is. You're right. Yeah.
The whole point of their fear is that this lab has Chimera and has Bellerophon, the antidote, and the virus.
Right.
Why don't they just immediately focus their intentions on that? No. Tom Cruise must recruit a cat burglar, Thandi Newton, who he must also fall in love with, apparently.
Immediately!
Again, I'm not going to crush that because they're way too hot. They're way hot, too hot not to fall in love. They're just ridiculously hot.
She anyway. Belongs with me.
Immediately, Anthony Hopkins tells Tom Cruise that she must become a pawn in their chess game because she's the ex-girlfriend. That's the only reason why she's useful of this Scottish terrorist. And she must go somehow fool him into doing what? Fool him into being distracted?
Fall back in love with her.
While Tom Cruise
so they can keep tabs on her.
And his guys try to figure out how to get hold of the virus and the antidote so that this guy doesn't sell it to the highest bidders for chemical terrorism.
Right.
All right. Tom Cruise, they form a side mission to basically take this pharmaceutical company's CEO hostage. They make him think that he was infected with the virus by putting this gas in the car, in the limo.
It's such an aside, too.
Right. Tom Cruise kidnaps him, and basically he gets this guy to tell his whole plan where he's just developing the antidote so that he can have a virus, so that he can basically scare people into buying the antidote because the virus exists. He's in it to make money. I'm sorry. I have to admit that.
Yeah,
all right.
It's...
While this is going on,
Totally unnecessary side plot.
Cat pun, Thandie Newton, who's buddied up to her ex-boyfriend again, going to horse races, whatnot. I don't know what they're passing envelopes. I drifted off to sleep in the middle of this a couple times. Anyway, she is now drawn outside. He's suspicious.
Yes.
Sorry, can't say that
easy
word
for you to say.
Doug Ray Scott is suspicious. Doug Ray, sorry, can't say any words. And of course, he's got Ethan Hunt mask on. And
the masks are so overdone in this.
Yeah, he gets her to reveal the fact that she's
in love with Ethan,
working on the sly, blah, blah, blah. So he's figures that Ethan Hunt is about to pull something. They all focus on the laboratory with the actual known, Chimera and Bellerophon. He realizes that he doesn't have the virus. He only has the antidote. So now when Ethan, which he should have done an act ago, goes to heist. You think it's another big heist scene. Nope. Foiled by the bad guys.
Until the end, but yeah.
All right. It's kind of a goofy gunfight.
Yeah, and she injects herself with the last available vial of Chimera.
Why is she there? Yeah, she's there.
Stupid.
Also,
Ethan ditches her. Says, you stay with him.
He's kind of forced to ditch her. Well, at least she gets some plot armor there because she thinks he's going to kill her.
Right. Yeah, and she becomes indispensable.
And she becomes indispensable because what's in her blood is the last known whatever existence of the virus.
So then it becomes a chase.
So it's a chase where Tom Cruise, of course, has to storm a motorcycle guarded base. A motorcycle henchman guarded base with a lot of doves.
This plot is so unnecessarily convoluted.
There's doves all over this bad guy base.
Everywhere. Doves and pigeons.
And he has to storm it on foot. The helicopter is helping him fight the motorcycle bad guys. And then he's like, no, helicopter, you must go
get
Thandie Newton, who was released.
Who's on a cliff.
But before that, she's released into the public, which apparently they never address again because apparently...
It's so dumb.
Yeah, apparently the virus is not like airborne if you like go into public because...
It's like an STD.
Yeah, whatever. So the Russian guy didn't spread it. So why are we afraid that Thandie Newton's going to spread it?
Big allegory for protected sex.
No, but it's dumb. It's really dumb because the Russian guy didn't spread it on the plane, which we find out mid-movie. Mm-hmm. The bad guys should have found it out mid-movie, but I guess they didn't. So in the middle of the movie, they're saying, all right, we're going to release Thandie Newton into Sydney proper. But, okay, the virus didn't spread before. Why would we think it's going to spread now? Why is this a threat?
Might be some holes in the screenplay.
Major plot hole right there. Of course, the main hero and the main villain get a hold of some motorcycles. Tom Cruise doesn't have to fight anybody two at one time. He has to fight them one at a time, one henchman after another. He beats them. There's a whole big trade-off with the mask thing versus the Hugh Stamp character.
I'm just getting angry listening to this recap.
The Hugh Stamp character, kind of the bad guy's number one lieutenant.
He's brutally murdered.
Brutally murdered.
Brutally murdered.
Because he's wearing... the Ethan Hunt mask, which Ethan Hunt put on him.
Yes.
Then there's the big motorcycle fight. Then there's the big fist fight after the motorcycles fly into each other and the guys fly off. Matrix style, I think it was.
Totally believable.
Now, here's my worst scene of every movie ever made.
Uh-huh.
This guy, Doug Ray Scott, has Tom Cruise dead to rights at the very end. The helicopter has landed. Thandie Newton has not died. He has the gun pointed on Tom Cruise.
Just refuses to pull the trigger ever.
Tom Cruise, number one, flips the antidote,
which
he's somehow stolen from the bad guy, flips it to Ving Rhames, not shot, kicks up the gun, which if you ever kicked up anything, if you ever played hacky sack, takes forever. So he's like doing goofy shit for 30 seconds while this guy's got the gun. Said, maybe should I shoot him? Should I shoot him? No, I won't. Falls to the ground and then he beats him in a shootout kind of gunfight. Shoots him before the other guy could shoot back.
I need to stress something about Mike's review. That is exactly what happened in this movie. All that ridiculous absurdity, the unnecessary convolution. Now, look, every Mission Impossible movie has taught us we have to jump through hoops and suspend some disbelief in some areas.
Correct.
Good Lord, this movie, though. It's just so... You're right. Just go to the lab. You need to know what Chimera is. I get it. You don't understand. But as soon as you know what it is, just go to the lab.
Immediately.
Yeah, just go there and either guard it or destroy it.
Get it? You need that anyway, most importantly, right?
Why was Sandy Newton there at the lab?
I mean, she's good in this movie as an action movie heroine. She does good stuff. Her acting, she's gorgeous, obviously.
Right.
She's totally irrelevant to the whole movie.
She is treated as a blow-up doll until the third act.
Correct.
Because her introduction to this movie is that scene where they, her and Tom Cruise lock eyes from across the room.
We didn't even mention the meet-cute scene between her and Tom Cruise.
It's so bad.
Where they literally get in a car chase, endanger not only their lives.
This is my worst
scene. But like 50 people's
lives.
This
is my worst scene. So
I didn't even talk about
that. The first introduction to them is she's trying to steal this necklace from this place, and
it's
Tom Cruise
so
has to go recruit her, and oh my God, look at these two beautiful people. In the way that he introduces himself, they're in this bathtub hiding from people, and she's straddling him immediately, and we're supposed to believe just because they are straddling each other, and even though they are opposing forces in this heist, that their attraction is so palpable and so unavoidable.
Yeah, all right, hold on. I have to quibble with you here, sir, because have you ever seen the SNL skit where the Antonio Banderas character is too sexy, senor? It's too sexy.
No, but that's,
and Fred Armisen is always
exactly
going, too sexy. Listen, these two are too sexy not to
mate. The gratuitous down blouse shots when we're looking at it from Thandie Newton's
correct
point of view, and it's just her boobs are right in the middle of the picture next to Tom Cruise's smiling face.
Here's the thing, like, audiences are so smitten with the attractiveness of both sexes.
You're right.
In this scene, like, none of we forgive
it.
You're correct.
But, okay.
You're a better person than I am.
So that's not bad enough, right?
I'm not complaining because I'm like Thandie Newton. And everybody else is like Tom Cruise.
But so, fine. Tom Cruise foils her thief attempt, forces her to give back the necklace that she's there for to steal, wants to recruit her, and has made her life so unnecessarily difficult from that point on. So the very next scene, he stalks her by getting a phone number to her phone that she herself does not have.
Which, of course, you can't even give her any, like, agency or credibility there. Like, to me, she totally discredits herself because she was like, all right, this is a meet-cute scene. Let's get an 18-car pileup on the side of a mountain.
Exactly.
And I'm going to have my car fall off the mountain, this $100,000 sports car.
The misogyny isn't bad enough on Tom Cruise's part.
He's supposed to save her already.
We need her response to be, I'll join you if you catch me.
You're right. No, it's disgusting.
Driving through the side of this mountain, he beats her, has her hanging off the side of a cliff. They have known each other for 20 minutes.
Yes.
And he saves her, and then she falls in love again immediately, even though he's done nothing but harass her.
Correct. You are correct, sir. And I am very proud of us right now because most of the film Twitter and the podcasts I've listened to about the rest of the critics out there who are kind of doing a recap at different pace, you know, at a different pace than we are, they have talked about this movie being awesomely bad and awesomely awesome in many ways. No, this movie's freaking
this
bad.
This movie's bad.
It's terrible. Wrong.
The shot of her boobs, just like John Woo and subtlety, I don't think have ever gone well together. It's like, do you get this is about sex?
Right.
Do you understand that these people are attractive? Look at these boobs. Look at Tom Cruise's face. Look at how she's straddling him.
Overt.
Their faces are close. They're going to kiss, that means.
This movie should have been made in 1987 when subtext wasn't invented yet.
Exactly.
By proof, we've done all those half-episodes about best original songs
and
those music videos.
And like immediately they go from that scene, Tom Cruise saving her, to waking up in bed next to each other the next morning.
Now, here's the thing. All right, can we segue kind of where it fits in the MIU kind of deal
here?
Because this is kind of the rest of our review, I guess. Some of the best lines or the best back and forth tete-a-tete of the series. Again, this is kind of where like the awesomely bad thing falls in. All right, Tom Cruise, I don't think I can get her to do that. Hopkins, you mean it'll be difficult. Cruz, very. Hopkins, well, this is not mission difficult, Mr. Hunt. It's mission impossible. Difficult should be a walk in the park for you.
Because I'm Superman not an actor. 4, the quest for truth.
That's pretty great back and forth. I just totally shat upon it, but that's pretty great. All right, I got a couple more.
That's great?
It's pretty good. It's entertaining. And the timing of Anthony Hopkins' smile during that tete-a-tete is pretty... I should stop calling it tete-a-tete. I'm way too... backwoods. Get away with that. You know, those many vowels I can't handle. Okay, anyway, Cruz, would it make you feel better if I didn't want you to do it? Thandie Newton, yes. Then feel better! Yes. That's pretty awesomely bad. Again,
I wonder if that was the same setting that the Austin Powers shtick where Will Ferrell falls in the pit.
The Spy Who Shagged Me is like a parody of this movie, isn't it?
Yes.
But here's the weird thing. This movie was made after it, wasn't it?
I don't know off the top of my head.
No, I'm wrong that I'm right. I forget where I am.
I'm so ass backwards.
The Spy Who Shagged
Me
was made after this, I think. And no, The Spy Who Shagged Me, we paused this whole episode and we looked it up. The Spy Who Shagged Me was made in 99. So after The Spy Who Shagged
Me. So this might be a parody of The Spy Who Shagged Me.
No, this is ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous. They just saw the parody, how made fun of these conventions are when they're dumb. And they did the same thing. What's the
beat
difference?
For beat.
What's the difference between the Mike Myers, Heather Graham car chase at the beginning of The Spy Who Shagged
Nothing.
Me and the one in the beginning of Mission Impossible 2?
Nothing.
The Spy Who Shagged Me was a parody of all the goofy-ass ones yes. from the Bond movies. And this movie's just like, yeah, we're going to have a goofy-ass meet-cute car chase.
Okay, so we have this convoluted setup and this big plan. We have this side... I thought this was one of my best scenes. This is a really cool scene. The side-by-side telling of how this is going to go down in the lab. And Dougray Scott is explaining... He knows Ethan Hunt like the back of his hand. This is how he's going to plan this. And Ethan Hunt's saying, this is how we're going to do it. And it's the same plot. And Dougray
yes.
Scott is saying, he's not going to hurt a soul. He's going to enter from the least guarded position because he doesn't want to kill anyone. He doesn't want to have a body count, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Yes.
So we have the whole scene in the lab. Naya injects herself, whatever. Ethan Hunt then has to go to this meeting between McCloy and the Dougray Scott character and is killing everybody along the way. We just had a 10-minute soliloquy about how this guy doesn't like a body count. And he's snapping necks and kung-fuing people. And he's setting up Ambrose's right-hand man to be slaughtered, viciously shot a billion times in the face and chest.
Yeah, I don't know if John Woo even read the script. I think he's just like, I want this
through line
action. Well, you're right, though, in that I love the fact that this convention exists in screenwriting.
Yes.
This is in every heist movie ever made. While they're describing the plan, they're showing you the plan in
right.
action.
I love
That's
that.
Beautiful.
I'm too. I'm with you. I love that. And I love that Dougray Scott was showing himself a capable antagonist.
I don't know
scene.
Who invented that. Maybe the Thomas Crown Affair guys way back. But whoever invented that is a genius. That is a genius. It's so economic
now
in
I'm
terms
gonna,
of writing.
I'll take my snobbish hat off. Another best scene of mine. Well, I know we're doing this in kind of a wishy-washy way, but I can't coherently talk about this movie. Another best scene. I did like the scene where Tom Cruise blows up the doorway in the meeting and then is walking by staring at Dougray Scott through the flames and stuff when he blows it up. And I like that. I'm a sucker
for that. Was
there
doves in that scene?
There was, of course. Two fly by
just,
first.
Oh my God, a lighthouse infested by doves. Dude, we need an evil lair. Make sure it's infested by way too many doves.
Oh God, this movie. I don't know, man. When they jump off the mic motorcycles.
Like, more doves.
The dove expense account for this movie. John, we approved your budget, but why do you have $2.5 million of a bird shop?
Just terrible. In terms of my best scenes, I have lines that I just made me laugh. They're so bad. Tom Cruise, when they send Thandie Newton to do her thing undercover, he just goes, "We just rolled up a snowball and threw it into hell."
Yeah.
I had to write that down. And then Cruz at the horse track, Cruz and Newton meet up. And he's like, whatever you do, don't turn around. And they talk to each other while she's turned away. And then she turns around and he goes,
you
turned
around.
And she goes, what are you going to do? Spank me?
She's so over-sexualized. Oh my God. The entire time.
It's just so bad and horrible. Anyways, and then here's the thing. My favorite line, it's so bad in the movie. Dougray Scott, the bad guy, talks to himself, and he's like, "Oh, we've got an opportunity here.
Oh, nice.
Good. I'm not going to miss it." Talking to himself, looking out the window in exactly that brogue.
This movie. Yeah, Tom Cruise saves the day. I remember being hyped at the end of it because this was the middle of the big Attitude era. So in the big final scene, the big final fight, Tom Cruise gets Dougray Scott in like a rock bottom pose.
Yeah,
and I remember my 12-year-old self like going ape shit that the WWE was being recognized in a movie.
And yeah, and if I'm going to get serious for a minute in terms of my dislike, I must say that the misogyny of the villain character, the fact that they isolate his misogyny is, his flaw is that he's jealous of his lieutenant being jealous of his girl. No, they're all misogynists. They're all being chauvinistic. The fact that she's being objectified at all is wrong. The fact that she's being put in this situation at all is wrong.
There is not a man in this movie.
John Woo and Tom Cruise are wrong for her portrayal.
Think themselves
Robert
better.
Towne is wrong.
Anthony Hopkins has a quote of Tom Cruise trying to talk her out of using Thandie Newton. What, she's not prepared to lie to a man?
Yeah, actually, Tom Cruise, I give him credit for saying that. Like, right. She's not prepared for this. And Tom,
to what, lie to a man? Or sleep with him and lie to
him?
She's a woman, isn't she?
She's got all the training she's ever needed. What do you mean? She can't sleep with a man and lie to him? That's what every woman does all the time. That's gross. Yeah, it's the grossest thing ever. They did this a little bit between the John Voight character and the Don't Covet Thy Neighbor's Wife in the first movie. This is what I foreshadowed earlier that I wanted to mention. They're fucking old, gross, white, disgusting men in both these movies at the helm of these movies.
The whole McCloy storyline where they kidnap him and put him in a hospital and then just put him back in the car in his suit.
Not good.
I'm done with this movie. This was a bad movie.
Bad movie.
This was not an awesomely bad movie. This is a bad movie.
Yes, with some awesomely bad lines. Yes. That'll be my argument.
Sure.
And a great stunt on the mountain.
Yeah.
So he did all that for this piece of crap.
Approved this script.
It's amazing. But this movie made $550 million and probably a profit of almost $200 million. Yeah. And never mind what it made on video.
Yeah.
And we're not. And yeah.
That's what we have. That's our second Mission Impossible half-isode.
At least we get J.J. Abrams writing and directing the next one.
With a great villain.
Yes.
A great villain. So that's something to look forward to. Mission Impossible 3 coming up. The financials from that one, I think, are going to reflect that a lot of people didn't have a good taste in their mouth for the franchise after this movie.
True.
Probably rightfully so.
Delayed reaction. It's almost like a professional, whatever, football player, baseball player, making the All-Star Game or Pro Bowl a year later.
Yeah, right. And then having the residual effects and having to deal with the decline from there. But that's all stuff we're going to talk about in our next half episode where we do Mission Impossible 3. Stay tuned for that. In a couple days, we're leading up to Fallout coming out at the end of July. Go back and listen to our first episode. Let us know what you thought of those two, of the first one and this one, rather. And if you disagree, if you found value in this movie, God help you, but let us know.
Yeah, a few plugs for me too. We'll have Netflix Quarterly out. We have HBO Mid-Year Report, Oscars Mid-Year Report. We did retrospectives for a few weeks there on old Oscars 91, 89, screenplay, actress. We did an MCU review. We kept up with all the big movie events that we think should contend for Oscars, from Ant-Man and the Wasp to Incredibles 2 to Hereditary, of course, with Toni Collette's performances. I think we got just a vast array in terms of our catalog. This is one of those Oscar off-season, you know, fun little jaunts for us. I had way too much fun recording this today.
This
was a blast.
This was way more entertaining than any part of this movie.
I needed this.
Yeah, guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies and figuring out these impossible missions with us. Michael, any last words of wisdom?
There's no wisdom in my brain after thinking about this movie for an hour.
All right, guys, we'll check you out next time. See you.